All right, so let's take our Bibles this evening, and we're going to be in the book of Genesis again. When we left off 2 weeks ago, God had made all the plants and trees and herbs that have seeds and trees that bear seeds and everything, but there was nothing that to support them in terms of sunlight. It's kind of a big deal. You don't have to be super educated in agronomy or in agriculture to know that plants need sunshine. It's one of the most basic lessons that you learn in like elementary biology, right? Plants have chlorophyll and they need that in order to live, and you learn the structures. So here's the thing. God made all the plants. He made all the herbs that have seeds, all the trees that have that bear fruit, but there was not yet sun, right? That's the order of how creation works. Today we're going to see how God worked to bring about the things that were needed for the rest of the earth. So when he began to create on day four, we pick it up in verse 14, and this is where he begins his creation on day four. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmaments of the heavens, and to divide the day from the day, or to divide the day from the night. And let them be for signs and seasons, for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light to the earth." And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day. So first, let's talk here about day four. I'm really thankful for day five because it provides animals and I like to eat meat. I'm really thankful for day six because he made humans and I'm a human, right? So I'm thankful for that. But I'm also really thankful, probably right up there with day four and what he made. I don't know if you're like me, but do you ever just enjoy walking outside at night when the stars are out? Or do you enjoy seeing like the first glimmer of light in the morning and all the colors it produces in the sky, or the setting sun and watching it fall down? Or we were driving this week back from Greenville the night that the full moon was out, and we were driving, and it was just like, it was really cloudy that night, and the kids were bummed because they're like, "We don't get to see the harvest moon." And we were driving, we were coming back on 120th through Grant, coming back this way, and all of a sudden there was like this clouds, and then whoosh, the moon was like right there. And we got to see it for like 2 minutes, and the kids were like, "Ah," you know, so. Those celestial bodies, like sun, moon, and stars, are just amazing, aren't they? I mean, if you get out in a place where it's dark and stand there and look at the Milky Way, see meteors and shooting stars, or you see the northern lights maybe if you're far enough north or in there at the right time, it really is an amazing thing. I think not only the fact that I grew up in the shadow of NASA, because I lived in Florida till most of the time until I was about 11, so we were always watching up. Watching shuttles and rockets and all manner of things going up, right? But I think there's just something within all of us, and the Bible points to it, there's something within all of us that causes us to gaze up into the heavens and wonder, right? The sun and the moon and the stars, they make you go, wow. Now you stand there and you see the brilliance and the beauty of them, and God made them for a lot of different purposes. Psalm 19 talks about the two means by which God has revealed himself. It talks about the word of God, but the psalm begins, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament," or the expanse, "they show his handiwork." It goes on to talk about the word of God being the perfect source of God's revelation, but you can't just walk outside and see the stars and the sun and the moon and just be like, "Well, yeah, that doesn't have anything to teach me." There's so much glory revealed in what has been made. And that's why Paul reflected in Romans 1, he said, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood in the things that are made, even his eternal power and the Godhead, so that they are without excuse." I marvel at those words because you look at things like animals and trees and the stars and the moon and everything else out there, and Paul writes there that the invisible attributes of God are clearly seen through what he's made. Just think about that, right? When we stare at the heavens and we stare at the sun and the moon and the stars, or we look at the intricate creations of God and the world, the invisible attributes of God are just right there for us. So clear that he says that people are without excuse, right? There's enough knowledge out there in the things that he's created. There's enough revelation that says God made that people can be held accountable for that. Right? The world is such a wonderful place. These lights that are the feature of day four point our hearts towards the one who deserves all glory. And I've really been thinking about this lately, and I don't know why it never entered my brain until recently, but I've really been thinking, for all the majesty that the sun provides, and all the glory of the stars and the heavens at night, and the sort of wonder of the glow of the moon and everything, you know, they're all temporary. God has this massive testimony to his glory, and it'll all be gone someday. Because there's no sun or moon or stars in heaven, is there? Right? The light of the new world, the new heaven and new earth, is God himself. There'll be no more sun, there'll be no more moon, there'll be no more stars. So it's a temporary signpost, if you will, that tells all the people in all of the world for generations upon generations that God exists. So why did he make these lights? Well, the text talks about a couple of different reasons here. One is to create order. Notice in the text, he specifically mentions here that they will be here to divide the day from the night, and then for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. So he gives these celestial bodies to us for the purpose of separating day from night, and for separating the signs and the seasons, and also for days and for years. He's going to use them to communicate to us the rhythm of life. He's going to use them to us to communicate special benchmarks when there'll be signs in the heavens, and he uses them as sort of as a beacon, if you will, to alert us to what is going on. So let's talk for a couple minutes about what that means. Think about the majesty of what God created in the sun and the moon and the stars on this fourth day of creation. He not only created a system of time, but he also created a system of complex time markers like days, months, and years, and seasons, and you can calculate them all just by looking up. You ever thought about that? I mean, isn't it amazing? I mean, we have calendars on our phones and on our tablets, and some of you still have them, that you carry them, a physical calendar, you've got a big desk when sitting on your desk, right? But for all of the people of the world, what did they use for the calendar? The sun, the moon, and the stars, right? The sun's a very obvious one, right? Because when it's out, it's day, and when it's not, it's night. So it makes it very simple. Day, night, day, night, day, night, day, night, right? It's communicating to us, this is the beginning and this is the end of each and every day, and that is very simple. But the moon communicates a whole lot more to us, right? You can watch the different phases of the moon, and you can calculate how the seasons are going. In fact, that's why the Jewish calendar is still on a 28-day lunar cycle. Right? Because you look and say, okay, God, divide up the earth into 28-day chunks, because you've got from new moon to full moon and then back, right? And that tells you, and you can tell what shape the crescent or the gibbous is, right? You can tell if it is the back side of the month or the front side of the month. I mean, isn't it amazing? And it's always there. And not only that, God also created the arrangement of everything, and that is how we can see some stars in certain positions during certain parts of the year, and there's some stars like Polaris that you can always use to find north. And isn't that amazing, right? And then for us, that's how we think about it here. I have no experience other than just being there a couple of times in the southern hemisphere. Their hemisphere works the same way, but flips upside down with different stars. Which is an amazing thing to think about. God arranged all of this stuff so that he could arrange times and seasons and all of this. But there's even more to it than that, because in the way that God created the earth and the path that it takes and its tilt and its rotation, that tells us what season it is, right? We're entering into that season that nobody really likes. I mean, fall is beautiful, but I'm talking about the one after that, right? But all of this was designed by God so that every year it's predictable. Every year you have some idea of when spring starts and when summer starts and when fall starts and when winter starts, right? And all of that is based on not only the earth's position in relationship to the sun, but also in its tilting and also in the way that it's rotating each and every day. I mean, you think God designed all of that. And we just read God made the sun, the moon, and the stars. But you think about the complexity of how all that's working together, how God created the entire solar system and arranged them in such a way that they could not only tell time like day and night, not only be sources of signs, but also that could determine the seasons on a planet. I mean, God designed all of this, and he just says it in such a way. These lights are here in order for signs and seasons, for days and for years. And he just says, let them be. But the complexity behind all of it, of the way that the earth is arranged in our orbit around the sun, and all of the planets have their function orbiting around the sun, and that's only one little galaxy, one little solar system, right? Because the Milky Way galaxy is enormous, and that's only one of thousands of galaxies that exist in the whole entire world. I mean, God did all of this, and it's not even something that's going to last for forever because it's all going to fade away someday. But just think about the complexity of that. Think about how God has put all of this, all of the details about measurements and the ratio of us to the sun and all the angles and everything that have to be just right, because if we get a little bit closer by like 1%, then the earth burns up. And if we get a little bit further away by 1%, then we freeze to death. I mean, it's just astonishing. And it just stays like that every year, right? I mean, you ever think about this? Every year for thousands upon thousands of years now, this has just been going on because God designed it perfectly. And it just continues to work. God planned all the measurements, the speeds of spinning, the path that the orbits would travel. He invented gravity and all these things along the way that would all be a part of it. I mean, God did all of this. And we just have to really stand back in awe. Now, why did there need to be this complex system of time and season on the earth? Well, a few practical reasons you and I know about is there is a natural cycle to growth and death and renewal in farming, right? You can't just grow stuff all the time. There has to be a period when something grows, and then when it's fertile, and then when it's time to be harvested, and then there's a period of rest. If you try to simply make the ground produce all the time, eventually you run out of nutrients in the soil, and then you're stuck trying to supplement to catch up. Right? But there's this natural cycle to everything. You and I probably love something that comes off of a tree right now, like maybe apples or peaches that just finished, right? We love cherries and different things, whatever your, you know, thing is that you like. Fruit trees, they need a certain amount of cold hours in order to rejuvenate so they can blossom and then produce fruit again the next year. There's all this seasonal stuff that God built into creation and part of what is happening. The same thing is true in forests and in life. We need these natural cycles of growth and death and renewal. God designed it in such a way so there'd be fertile times and then rest times and then fertile times and then rest times. And he did this all by the way he arranged the planets. It also gives order to the world. Daytime, nighttime, this season and this season. God did it so that there'd be order to the world. And another reason is that as we think about Genesis and its connection to Israel, because this is why Genesis was written. It was that God gave it to Moses for the people as they left Egypt and went in towards the promised land. Part of the formative document in their history was Genesis that Moses wrote down because God gave him the information. Another reason, though, is because that why this matters is because God, in the law, gives them all these different seasonal holidays that they're supposed to observe. Festivals that are connected with harvest and festivals that are connected with atonement and all these different things, right? How are they supposed to keep track? Well, God gives them. Then there's these seasonal markers. There's this rhythm to the calendar year. There's this rhythm to the nation of Israel. And he uses the signs in the stars and the heavens in order to communicate these things too. And he did that not only for our planet, but for every planet across the entire universe. Everything's in order. Everything is in symmetry. Everything is in balance. Right? Now, think about this for a second. I'll comment on this again more later, but when is the last time that you bought Legos? Maybe you've never bought them. It happens in my house all the time, right? And you open up the Legos and you dump them on the floor and it automatically puts itself together. When is the last time that, you know, if you had all the parts for a motor, for a vehicle or for a lawnmower or something, and they just dumped all the parts on the floor and then you just stood there and waited? When do they ever come together perfectly? Never. This is one teeny tiny little example, right? Because the complexity of sun and moon and stars is really nothing compared to the complexity of human beings. If you just put a big blob of stuff out there in the space, right? When will it come together on its own to create this sort of symmetry and balance and reason? When will you see cause and effect in such a profound way that generations, no matter where you're at, northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere, no matter which eon or age that you live on, it's all consistent? When does that ever happen? Just by chance, right? I hope you see that, you know, these things like sun, moon, and stars, you're like, okay, fine, whatever. Let's talk about the complexity of humans and how it points to the goodness of God. No, just look at some of the basic things that are all around us. This is why I say, and why the psalmist said that, and why Paul would say it too, is that when you take a minute to honestly and carefully observe the things that are around us, the glory that is of God in the heavens, this is the reason that people are held without excuse. Because you can't honestly look at the complexity and the intricacies of what's happening in the sky and be like, yeah, that just happened. It never works like that. I promise you. I could go to the Lego store and I could buy every single Lego set that exists there and I could open them all and dump them on the floor and not one would put itself together. They all require someone to do it, right? And they required even before, beyond the hands of the child that put them together, they required someone to engineer the whole thing and then produce the whole thing. Think about the complexity of what God has made and how it points and just points and points and points and points to say, there's God. There's somebody behind this. Who is he? We got to find out who had the wisdom and the power to do such complex and wonderful things. So that's one of the reasons that he made these lights. Another reason is that he made these to give light to the earth. And in order to do this, he has a daytime light and a nighttime light. It also says, and maybe one of the greatest understatements in the scriptures, he also made the stars. Right? He also made the stars. Stars are just fascinating when you think about them, right? You see them out there twinkling in the sky, and so there's little songs written about them and everything else. But the last I checked, the number of stars that are out there is 10 to the 24th power. So that's 10 followed by 24 zeros. I don't know what that number is, but it's enormous, right? Our national debt's not quite there yet, but that's the number of stars. But listen to what it says in the Psalms. Psalm 147, verse 4. The Lord counts the number of stars and he calls them by name. Whoa! Whoa! You ever get your kids' names mixed up? Ever get your grandkids' names mixed up? I'm sure I'll mix up all of your names at some point and call you the wrong name, right? Can you imagine having 10 to the 24th zeros, names for all the stars and calling them all by name? We talk about God's wisdom and creativity and power. That is the truth. The stars are not deities, like some people said. They're not people that have died and gone up there. They're not the things that we use to predict the course of our life. They are not our ancient ancestors. They're minor lights. They don't even make the major light for the day and the major light for the night. They're just extra, right? And he also made stars. Right? They're small things. But one of the things that we have to talk about here in terms of being aware of some of the controversy that's out there in terms of looking at a literal creation, it does center on stars. You know that the sun is a star, hopefully. You've lived enough life to know that it's not a planet, it's a star. And it takes about 8.5 minutes for the sun's light to get here to Earth. Okay, so the light that is shining out there, which is a little bit, came, you know, at the first point of my message tonight, or while we were still singing, right, depending on how the time goes, right? So it takes that amount of time, and you know that light probably travels at 186,000 miles per second, so think about that in terms of how light travels. Now, the reason I bring this up is because this brings a very practical sort of apologetic question that comes up a lot of times in the book of Genesis and for Christians in general. The closest star outside of our sun is 4.3 light years away. So the light that we see from it was sometime in the spring of 2016. Okay? Now that one's the closest to us. The North Star is 433, call it 434 if you round up, light years away. So that means light travels 186,000 miles per second. The number of miles that it travels per year is a light year. And it's 433, call it 434 light years away from the Earth. So that means that when you go outside the next time you see the North Star, it's part of the Little Dipper constellation, then that means that that light showed up sometime, originated from the star and came towards us sometime around the time that Copernicus said that the sun was at the center of the universe and the Earth rotated around it and not the other way around. Right? That puts in perspective a little bit how far away Polaris is. Or Betelgeuse, which is one of the biggest stars in our whole universe, it's 642 light years away. So that means it was the light that we see from Betelgeuse today originated before there was even an English translation of the Bible. 1378 or so, we'll call it. Okay. Now, that is interesting for sure, but let's think about something like this. You and I, with our naked eyes, can see the next galaxy over, if you want to call it and such, the Andromeda Galaxy, but it's 2.5 million light years away. And this poses the apologetic question that I was going to bring up here, okay? How is it that we can see light that takes 2.5 million light years to get here? right? This is one of the questions that people have, and it's a really basic question, right? The speed of light is a constant. Einstein figured this out. A lot of people talk about it as a constant for a lot of physics and mathematical formulas. Everybody, Christian, non-Christian, accepts that the speed of light is a constant in terms of mathematical calculations and in physics. So how is it then that we can somehow say as Christians that the earth might be 4,000 to 6,000 years old and there's light that we're seeing now that's from millions and millions of light years away? In fact, the furthest star that we've observed now, I think, last I saw, was about 38 billion light years away. Which is why some people say, right, the earth has to be at least 38 billion years old because the light had to have time to travel to us. It's a reasonable thing, right? So how do you answer an objection like that? How do you answer an objection to say the speed of light is a constant and everybody accepts that and the light that we can see with our naked eyes took 2.5 million light years to get to us? It's a legitimate question, isn't it? And if somebody who has some basic scientific knowledge might ask that kind of a question. And what we have to say is what we talked about 2 weeks ago. When God made the herbs, were they full grown and already bearing seeds? Yeah. When God made the trees, were they already ready to feed humans that hadn't yet been created? And were they ready to feed the animals which hadn't yet been created? Were they ready to go? Yeah. And how is that possible? Well, it's possible because of the miraculous power of God. So I said 2 weeks ago that we described that as he made things with the appearance of age. Right? He made them with their full capacity and ready to go at this point. So the options are for us in terms of thinking about how is it that we see light from 2.5 million light years away is, one, the earth really is that old. Or two, the other option is that God used his miraculous wonder-working power to allow for things with the appearance of age to happen on the earth, so that way we can see that light immediately. It didn't have to travel 3.5 billion light years or something like that. We can see it now. We can see it because of the miraculous working power of God. Now you're like, well, that doesn't answer the question. Person who's a serious, agnostic. I realize that. But here's the options for us, right? The options are, I put all of my faith in chance happening in the universe, right? All the stuff just floating around there in space, and it all just came together. That's one option, right? It doesn't answer the question, where did all the stuff come from that went to make it all come together? The other option is that I believe in a God who has miraculous power and who can make light appear immediately, even though it's millions and in some cases billions of light years away. Now, I'll be honest. I would much rather believe that a creator was involved than chance was involved. And at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to, right? And this is one of the reasons that you just need to remember that you can never reason someone into salvation. Because both are accepted by faith. It's like if you were here with us this morning in Sunday school, this is why Paul could say, I trust in the power of the gospel instead of all sorts of critical thinking and all kinds, or not critical thinking rather, but deceptive reasoning and all sorts of highfalutin sort of rhetoric. What saves a person is God pulling the veil back so that the gospel can shine into their hearts. You're never going to reason a person into salvation. What's going to happen is that God makes a dead person alive. Is there reasonable answers for us as Christians to hold to what we observe in the world? Of course there is. But I would tell you that it takes faith either to believe in what God did or it takes faith into believing what a lot of the scientific community puts out there right now. And I'd rather, put faith in the creator than faith in chance. It's like I said with the whole Lego set thing, right? There is no way that I'm just going to dump 1,000 Lego pieces on my floor and they're going to come together. It doesn't matter how long I wait for. It does not matter how long I sit there and just look. I could wait for 1 billion years and they're not going to come together on their own. It's just not going to happen. The last I checked, also, chaotic events like explosions, they don't bring order and complexity, do they? They bring chaos. It was a month and a half ago. There was that explosion in Beirut. You guys watched the video of that? Did that bring order? Did that bring complex, well-oiled systems that stick around for forever? What did it make? Chaos, right? Flatten the city, it caused hundreds of thousands of people to be homeless immediately. It cost a lot of people their lives. Explosions don't bring order. And yet the scientific community would tell us, oh, yes, it was this big explosion, and it, all of a sudden, in the vacuum of the explosion that it created, that somehow it created order. No, it doesn't work that way. Now, what else did God do? Day 5. God made some of the animals. Look at what it says starting in verse 20. So then God said, let the waters abound with abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. And then God does something new here in the creation accounts. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the sea and let the birds multiply on the earth. So the evening and the morning were on the fifth day. Day 5, what did he do? Well, at this point, it's been light, earth, heaven, sea, plants, celestial objects. But now he makes real, living, moving, breathing species on the earth. You know, the sun, for all of its magnificence, is really a big ball of fire. That's all it is, right? There's nothing that complex. It is simply, essentially it's a big nuclear explosion going on and off again. Like, that's all it is. But that's all it is. It's a simple explosion. It's all that the sun really is, and it emanates light. But think about all of the complexity of creatures that live in the ocean. And think about the wonder of sitting there watching a bald eagle fly over you, or a red-tailed hawk or something. Or watching a pileated woodpecker just destroy a tree and it not kill itself, right? You ever watch that? I've been scared the living daylights out of me a few times out deer hunting. All of a sudden, a pileated woodpecker hits a tree behind me, you know, like two or three trees back, and all of a sudden, I'm about ready to come right out of my tree stand, you know? But think about all the complexity of birds and of fish, the things that are created here, in comparison to the sun, which is basically just a big ball of fire and light. All the complex things that exist in the seas and in the earth. Theories of evolution sometimes point that sea creatures came before land creatures. And I will say here, the Bible agrees. Sea creatures did come before land creatures by one day. We'll see land creatures next week, okay? But, you know, that's a lot of theories. They say something came out of the sea and it grew legs and because it wanted to get on ground. Well, sea creatures did come one day before land creatures, according to the Bible. So we'll give them that, right? They didn't evolve, but at least we can say they did come before that. But think about, have you ever watched any TV shows about marine biology or about Shark Week on Discovery Channel or anything? And you see all the complexity of how sharks can sense blood like a mile away and how they can sense electrical impulses in the water. I mean, there's the systems in fish are just incredible. All those deep sea creatures that are iridescent and somehow can glow in and of themselves in the middle of the ocean, or sperm whales that can dive down to depths that would crush anything that humans can create just to go catch squid or something. And squid, what a weird creature. Octopi, what weird things, right? They've got beaks and they shoot ink out. And I mean, there's just so many oddities, isn't there? Right? Little dainty seahorses, right, that just swim around, and eels that can create electricity in and of themselves. I mean, there are so many unique things that are in the ocean, right? And in fact, it seems like almost every year they're saying there's a whole list of new species that have been discovered in the ocean. Right, you got anemones, and you got clownfish, and you got all these things, right, that God, and it just simply says, let the earth abound with an abundance of living creatures, right? Let the waters abound with them, right? I mean, but think about all the complex little things that God made, right? You got this predator and this feeder fish, and you got these giant whales, and what do they eat? Krill and plankton that are like so tiny you can't even, all of the creativity and all of the wonder and all of the awe that's in the ocean, and then birds. Everybody wants to fly. Like every kid sitting out in a tree and they watch a hawk fly by, or they watch a vulture swooping around, or they see a songbird and they're like, I want to do that. I want to do that, right? That's why the Wright brothers, they're like, let's fly. And people from ages gone by have been thinking, how can we create something that can fly, right? I mean, you look at that, and really, in terms of complexity and what God's going to create in creation on day 5 and on day 6, the fish and the birds, they're nothing, really. They're really nothing. And yet God created all of them. all of the fascinating things that are out there in the world that God created, with things that fill the oceans and the things that fill the sky. I think often, I know that Answers in Genesis, they use the example of a woodpecker an awful lot. Right? If they just happened by chance, how did that go? Right? They decided, I'm going to smash my face into a tree because there's a bug in there somehow. It knew somehow there was a bug in there. I'm going to smash my face into a tree, but if they didn't have a beak that could handle it or a skull that could handle it, they're dead, and then that species is eliminated, right? And he goes through, Ken Ham goes through the whole spiel. But, I mean, all of the different birds that are out there in the world are just really fascinating. All the complexities there. We, you know, some of you helped us move in, so you've seen our house. It's kind of in the woods. And so we have every woodpecker that lives in Michigan in our backyard. And we've gone through, we've got checked off all the woodpecker species in our backyard. And it's amazing to watch all of them work. Day after day after day, they just work and work and work and work and work and work. And then, you know, you'll see something like a, you know, an indigo bunting or a scarlet tanager or something. You're like, how can something natural be that color? What? Or you think about, you know, things that fly in migrations. Some of these birds that travel all the way down to Central America and then to Canada and then back and then there and back and then there. I mean, all of the complexity. And God just made them and just said, let these things abound. These sea creatures, these living things that move, these birds that fill the air, he just created them. And when you just stop and step back and say, how did all of that beauty and all of that wonder and all of that complexity come about? God did it. Again, I would tell you, it does not happen by chance. There's no way. Right? If it was all by chance, we'd probably have one species of bird, or maybe two or three, right? But as it is, there are tens of thousands of species of birds that God created. And when you think about the oceans and all the things that fill the ocean, that did not happen by chance. It happened by God's design. And he just simply says, and sometimes I say it's prone to great understatement. God said, let the waters abound with the abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth and across the face of the firmament of the heavens. Just like, okay, well, let's move on to the next day. Just think about what is said there. The wonder of all of God's creativity. You know, God had to create all of the systems and all of the biological functions that it took for birds to fly and for fish to swim and for gills to work and all of the systems that were there he had to make and create them one by one by one by one. And he had created all the variety all by his creativity. And it just simply says, and God said, let there be this and let there be that. And then we move on. God is amazing, isn't he? He really is amazing. So God made everything here. We got giant sea creatures, the great ones, probably something like Job's Leviathan, the massive stuff, stuff that's bigger than anything else on the planets. You got every living thing that moves in the water. You've got every winged bird, some that don't even fly, like penguins. What a funny creature. Right? What a funny little creature. They got wings, but they can't fly. Why did God do that? Just for fun, right? This is his creativity on display. He's like, I'm going to make a bird that lives in the middle of the Arctic, and they can't fly because they can't get away. So they're going to swim, right? I mean, this is God's creativity. It's just astonishing. And the beauty of what he makes is incredible. God did all this, and then it says something here that I will wrap up with here tonight. He did something, as when I was reading, I made mention, he's never done this before in the days of creation. He gave a blessing to them. Now, the reason is pretty simple. Before he made water, do you need to bless the waters? No. He made the water above and the water below. Do you need to bless that? No. Do you need to bless dry land? No. Do you need to bless the sun, the moon, and the stars? No. Do you need to bless a living, breathing organism that it's required for it to procreate for the species to continue on? Well, yeah, that's when you start to see this being an issue and being a matter of it, of why this matters. And so verse 22 says, and God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the sea and let the birds multiply on the earth. And so there was evening and morning on the fifth day. Right? God not only created here, but he gives them a mandate and a blessing to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Recreate yourselves all over the place. Fill up the ocean. Fill up the sky. Isn't that amazing? God not only created them, but he gave them this permission and honestly a mandate to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. He blessed them, gave them permission to fill it all. That's amazing. God not only creates here, but he blesses. And that is a major theme in the book of Genesis, is that God creates and he blesses. In fact, there's a number of people that have said that creation and blessing is the simple summary of the entire book of Genesis. God creates and he blesses. In fact, that's what God told Abraham that he was going to do with him, even post-flood, post-fall, all that kinds of stuff. He said, I'm going to bless you, and in you I'm going to bless the world. Same word that's being used here. I'm going to make your descendants like the seashore. I'm going to make your descendants like the stars in the heavens. He blessed him in those ways. Our Creator not only creates, which is good enough, honestly. He gives permission for things to live, and he creates them. But not only that, then he blesses them on top of giving them life. He gives this mandate then for it. And so this is how the day ended. Now, 3 points here to take away from this in terms of conclusion. One, you need to remember this, and I've got these up there on the screen for you. God constructed the physical universe in an ordered and structured way to point to a creator. When you look at the sun, the moon, and the stars, you look at the fish, you look at the birds, if you really take an honest look at them, and you really are willing with an open mind to consider the majesty and the complexity and the beauty of them, there really is only one answer to the question of where did they come from? Someone made them. Someone designed them. Someone created them. The answer as to who the someone is, of course, is found in the scriptures. But when you look at the complexity and the order and the consistency of what is out there in the natural world, you really have to stand back and say, no, that didn't happen by chance. That didn't happen just because. I don't care how long you wait. That does not happen. The perfect mechanisms of the planets, the sun, the moon, the stars, they're a testimony to order, not to chaos. They're a testimony to creation and design rather than chance. A second thing we see when we walk away from this text is this, is that God arranged the world to lift our eyes up. God arranged the world in such a way that we'd look up. Right? What is declaring the glory of God each and every day? Things in the sky. Right? That's why people sit down in the grass and they look up at the sky and just daydream, right? That's why people walk outside and look at the stars. It's why they follow the sun with their eyes. It's why they follow the moon. It's the reason that God has done this, to lift our eyes upward. And who is above all of that? God is. Right? Who is the creator of heaven and earth? Who sits enthroned in the heavens and the earth is his footstool? God, who's above all of it. The presence of the lights, the grandeur and beauty demands that we lift up our eyes. And we must. The glory of God is set above the heavens, according to Psalm 8. And the third thing we see here, and as we walk away from this, is that God not only creates, but he also blesses. And this is true for what God is going to do with all the world. What he does with the birds and the fish of the sea is really a foretaste for what he's going to do for all of creation. He's going to create land animals, and he's going to do the same thing for them, and he's going to create humans, and he's going to do the same thing for them. Some of the blessings that God gives are for all of creation. The rain falls on the just and the unjust. Some blessings of God are given to those that are his children. But either way, God is a God who not only creates, but a God who blesses. Listen as we approach the communion table to these words that connect the two thoughts, at least in my mind. These are from Romans in chapter 4. Talk about the blessings that God gives to us. This is what Paul says. But to him who does not work, but leaves on him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is accounted to him for righteousness. Just as David describes the blessedness, same word, of the man to whom God imputes righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute sin. Same word. He created and blessed the world. Same word here. Right? Blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute sin. You know, God not only creates us, but what he goes takes it a step further, and he blesses us. And one of the greatest blessings that we have to talk about in the church as we read the scriptures is the blessing of having our sins forgiven. He not only creates us and sees us and knows that we'll be walking in sin, but he's willing to save us, and he's willing to bless us with salvation. That's an amazing thing. God just doesn't create us and then just say, do your thing, I'm out of here. God creates us and then actively blesses us. And one of the greatest blessings that you and I should always remember is the blessing that came about by the spilt blood of Christ and his broken body. His means of blessing us so that we could have our lawless deeds forgiven because we have sinned, and so that we could have our sins covered because they definitely need that. And even more than that, verse 80 says, blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute or give the penalty of sin to. Who did he give it to? He gave it to Christ on our behalf. So that way we give Christ our sin and then Christ gives us his righteousness. I mean, what a phenomenal thing that God has done for us.